News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Worldwide, approximately 134,000 people have died from COVID-19, and there's been more than 2 million confirmed cases. In the United States, there are nearly 30,000 COVID-19-related deaths and approximately 642,000 infections. The head of the World Health Organization said on Wednesday that he regretted U.S. President Trump's decision to pull funding for the organization and called for global unity to fight the new coronavirus pandemic. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said at a news conference that the United States of America has been a longstanding and generous friend of the WHO, and we hope it will continue to be so. We regret the decision of the President of the United States to order a halt in the funding of the WHO. The WHO was still assessing the impact and would try to fill any gaps with partners. But now was a time for the world to be united in its common struggle against the outbreak, which he described as a dangerous enemy. International Vaccine Institute Director General Jerome Kim said that the vaccine for the novel coronavirus disease is hopeful, though vaccines are hard to develop. Kim made the remarks in South Korea in an interview with the China Global Television Network, saying that it's a remarkable achievement to have human trials in 2 months. Kim has estimated that a COVID-19 vaccine will be available to 12 to 18 months. Before a vaccine is developed, however, scientists say that they have to make sure that people recovering from COVID-19 infection have antibodies that protect them against further infection. Scientists also have to know how the protective mechanisms work. This is VOA News. Britain was slow to respond to the outbreak of the novel coronavirus. That's according to Britain opposition leader Keir Starmer, criticizing the response to the coronavirus in his country. At least 12,000 people with COVID-19 have died in UK hospitals, and new data suggests the true death toll could be much higher. Boris Johnson, the prime minister, at first refrained from imposing the kind of lockdown seen in other European countries, only taking the step when studies forecast a potential 250,000 deaths. The British prime minister is himself recovering from COVID-19 complications that almost cost him his life. One of his scientific advisors says Britain could end up being the worst hit in Europe. Starmer, a former public prosecutor who took Labour's helm earlier this month, wants the government to reveal its exit strategy for a lockdown. He told BBC Radio people need to know what was coming next to maintain morale and hope. The Japanese government has widened its call for citizens to stay home to the entire country, coming on reports that as many as 400,000 could die there without more urgent action. The number comes from an internal government estimate reportedly obtained by local media. Japan had originally declared a state of emergency in only Tokyo and 6 other districts. There are no fines or penalties in place to force compliance, but the government said citizens should do everything in their power to limit interactions with other people by 70%. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is also considering, under new pressure, to pay out more cash to soften the economic blow of COVID-19. The government has already announced a $1 trillion stimulus package last week. Singapore earns global praise for mitigating its spread of the coronavirus. Migrant workers are facing a different reality there. Infections are mounting among them, and it may expose a weak link in the city's state efforts. As of Tuesday, over 1,600 of Singapore's roughly 3,300 cases were migrants. Medical experts had previously flagged the potential for mass infection among them. Singapore has more than 300,000 migrant workers living in cramped and unsanitary dormitories with often 12 to 20 people to a room. Rights groups have also criticized the government's initial policy response, saying it left the community behind. While the government put up Singapore residents returning from overseas in expensive hotels to limit contagion, some migrant workers have been confined to bunk rooms that they said had blocked toilets and overflowing bins. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian security forces are accused of excessive force and murder in enforcing COVID-19 lockdown measures.
It does not require police use of excessive force or dehumanization of the people to get them to obey government directives to stay at home. It is just that some police are reckless.
Human rights groups welcome court ban on brutal Zimbabwe COVID-19 lockdown. Malawians express reservation on planned 21-day lockdown. On edge of starvation, hundreds of Zimbabweans in Botswana want to go home. And Kenya ramps up testing to contain COVID-19.
If you know that an institution has had one or two individuals who have tested positive, it makes sense to say, let's first of all round up this institution and test all those workers who have been working with that person.
And the fight to lift the ban on alcohol during lockdown takes center stage in South Africa. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Many countries have announced lockdowns and other measures to control the spread of the coronavirus pandemic. But enforcing the measures is creating tension between security forces and citizens. For example, the Liberian Daily Observer newspaper Wednesday reported random police brutality against citizens as police tried to enforce President George Weah's COVID-19 state of emergency announced last week. The Nigerian Human Rights Commission released a report yesterday, Wednesday, accusing the police of killing Nigerians while enforcing coronavirus lockdown measures. On the contrary, the report said only 11 people have died from the pandemic. Lamba Opara is spokesperson for the Nigerian National Human Rights Commission. He says the deaths were caused by police disregard for protocols and the rules of engagement.
The report covered extensively all the various human rights violations. And then specifically with regards to the police, out of the 105 documented complaints of incidents, there were 18 extrajudicial killings. Out of these 18, the Nigerian police force is credited to have committed 7 killings. In this respect. And of course, this is as a result of excessive use of force and lack of application of the standard minimum rule in the use of arms.
Where in Nigeria did most of the alleged police killings take place?
If you recall, in that report, we said that there were 18 extrajudicial killings. Out of this, we said that 7 of the killings were recorded against the police. Out of these 18 deaths, 12 were recorded in Kaduna State alone. But it is not that those extrajudicial killings were committed by the police. The killings largely took place in Kaduna State, where we recorded 12 deaths.
What does your commission mean when your report said the Nigeria Correctional Service was responsible for 8 of the 18 deaths? What exactly do you mean?
You recall there was a specific incident in Kaduna State where there were some kind of riots by inmates of the Kaduna prison. That accounted largely for the number of deaths that was recorded, and specifically this occurred within the control of the Nigerian Correctional Service.
I have been reading from all around Africa that some people are not taking the threat posed by coronavirus seriously. And as a result, they are going on with their daily lives as if there is no danger out there. Could it be that perhaps the police need to do this to reduce the number of people that are being infected by this disease?
There is no excuse for any human rights violations at all. I think this COVID-19, everybody knows it's a novel disease. And so many people were taken unawares. People are not used to staying at home for a period of 3 weeks. Mostly they would want to go out to get something to eat. In that process, what it demands is understanding and then probably some kind of education and enlightenment. It does not require police use of excessive force or dehumanization of the people to get them to obey government directives to stay at home. It is just that some police are reckless. They go beyond their mandates and briefings, and therefore they are going to be held accountable.
Lamba Opara is the spokesperson for Nigeria's National Human Rights Commission. You are speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. After a state of emergency was declared last month in Guinea-Bissau due to coronavirus outbreak, videos of police brutality started cropping up on the internet. Carlos De Silva, a spokesperson for the Conscience and Uniformity Citizens Movement in Guinea-Bissau, spoke to Ricky Stryak about their concerns over potential abuses of power by the government during the state of emergency.
If they go and see you sitting in your places, in your neighborhood, even sometime in your veranda, they come to beat you up saying that you cannot stay there because, you know, according to the state of emergency, everyone's supposed to not be outside, you know, not gathering together. And this is really unbelievable. What makes me unbelievable or paradoxical is that say you declare the state of emergency to stop spreading of the virus or aggregation of the people, but at the same time, you create a kind of mechanism to make the concentration of more people possible. For example, let me give you an example of what I mean. You say, okay, you open the marketplace for, you open it from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. and then you close it. But this small period of time, a lot of people gather at the market because they know that if they don't go to the market, they will not have food. So you allow more concentration than that is habitual. So this is what I don't understand from this declaration of a state of emergency. And another thing also, is you police people, you are beating people because they are getting together, but they are always together, the police, when they are going to the mission to beat the people, you see them always getting together in the car or coming together in your neighborhood. But they are telling you at the same time, you cannot stay together, even two or three people, even in your veranda. This is very crazy.
As I understand it, there are videos that people posted, even the police were instructed to act like, be violent at times. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is instruction they are given. They are not the one who just get up and start beating the people. We saw the video of the Minister of Interior saying that, okay, we'll never abide by the law of the state of the emergency. It must be paid in his blood, in his body, in his flesh. So this is what he said publicly. We saw it in the videos. And so this is... This is a reality.
Is there a concern that the administration will use the state of emergency to further crack down on civil liberties?
Yeah, there is abuse of power because normally, you know, this time is very complicated because we have a government that doesn't have legitimacy of the people, and it's very difficult to all accountability.
That was Carlos De Silva, a spokesperson for the Conscience and Uniformity Citizens Movement in Guinea-Bissau. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from the capital, Bissau. Human rights groups in Zimbabwe have welcomed a court ruling ordering state security forces not to assault citizens while enforcing the country's coronavirus lockdown. One of those injured said he wants compensation from the government as his arm and leg were broken, allegedly by security forces. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
The High Court ruled Tuesday that security forces must respect human rights while enforcing the 21-day lockdown, which ends later this week. That followed an urgent petition from the advocacy group, Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, which said it had recorded several rights abuse cases by the army and police. 28-year-old Tendai Mtomben says security forces broke his arm and leg while forcing him to stay indoors last Friday. In a telephone interview, Mtomben said he cannot go back to South Africa where he works because of the injuries, so he now wants compensation. He says he does not believe forces will follow the court ruling. They act like they are drunk or frustrated because of poor remuneration when dealing with citizens. He is that he has dependents and he does not know how they are surviving since he's now stuck in Zimbabwe. Kumbirai Mafunda, the spokesman for Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, welcomed the High Court's ruling.
So we are glad that the court has found the police to have violated citizens' fundamental rights, and we hope that the police and soldiers will comply with the court order and conduct themselves in a manner which respects the Constitution, which respects people's fundamental rights rather than violating their rights.
In a separate ruling Tuesday, the High Court ordered the government to provide personal protective equipment to all medical staff to protect them from the coronavirus. Fortune Nyamande, the chairman of the Zimbabwe Doctors for Human Rights, says his association will now pressure the government to comply with the ruling.
So we think that this judgment will go a long way in terms of compelling the government to act in the right manner. Our next step definitely will be to ensure that this judgment is enforced, and if it is not enforced, we'll then seek all the necessary legal instruments to ensure that the decision of the court is respected.
Zimbabwe's Justice Minister Ziyambe Ziyambe said he would only comment on the rulings after talking to President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Mnangagwa is expected to review Zimbabwe's lockdown at the end of this week. The coronavirus has infected 18 people in Zimbabwe and caused 3 deaths. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Hundreds of Zimbabweans living in Botswana are applying for a trip home, saying the COVID-19 crisis has left them on the edge of starvation. The immigrants usually survive by doing odd jobs, but with Botswana in a lockdown due to the coronavirus, they cannot find work to support themselves. Kunduzi Dube reports from Habaruni.
54-year-old Josephine Mutsaka is one of many Zimbabwean illegal immigrants who lined the streets of Habaruni in search of odd jobs. But since Botswana announced a 28-day lockdown at the beginning of April, Mutsaka has had no source of income. Additionally, the immigrants were initially excluded from the Botswana's government's food parcels.
We are in a bad state. We have no food at the moment, and the only option is to go back home. When we are in Botswana, we survive through peace jobs, but that has stopped because of the lockdown. We can't blame the Botswana government for giving priority to its citizens.
Botswana's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Unity Dau, told local media that officials are discussing how to address the plight of immigrants. Some Zimbabweans had crossed into Botswana for shopping, but were kept in due to the lockdown. Some immigrants like Tendai Ndlovu are eager to return home, although returning Zimbabwean residents face a mandatory 14-day quarantine. Ndlovu is worried of being locked in the Zimbabwean government's holding center.
We do not know how long the coronavirus will be around. In the meantime, I just want to return home to be with the family, although I've heard people complain of poor conditions during quarantine in Plumtree.
Plumtree is the only crossing point between the Southern African neighbors that is currently open. A Zimbabwean embassy official confirmed the office has begun a process to repatriate both legal and illegal Zimbabwean immigrants. It's not known how many Zimbabweans live in Botswana, but in an average year, Botswana's government deports about 15,000 illegal immigrants to Zimbabwe. The Botswana government says it will assist the immigrants with transport up to the two countries' border post, with the first returnees expected at the Plumtree entry point on Thursday. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 16. Kenya's Ministry of Health will start mass testing of the population to contain the spread of the coronavirus. The first phase of the testing will prioritize high-density areas such as the slums of Nairobi and high-risk areas such as hospitals and quarantine centers. Rael Ombuo reports from Nairobi.
29-year-old Lillian Chow contracted a mild cough less than 2 weeks after doctors confirmed Kenya's first COVID-19 case in Nairobi. She thought the cough would go away after a couple of days, but it persisted. It is only after Chow's close colleague died from the coronavirus that Chow suspected her cough might be something worse. She says, "It was reported that one of our colleagues who died had COVID-19 and we had been in contact with her, together with a friend of mine, who we were experiencing the same symptoms. Doctors took us into quarantine. When my symptoms went down, I went back to work. We both did. The symptoms got stronger and we were taken for testing. The results came back positive." Both Chow and her friend are now among dozens held in an isolation unit at Coast General Hospital in the city of Mombasa. Because of cases like those, Kenya's Ministry of Health announced Tuesday that it would start mass testing of the population to contain the spread of the virus. In Nairobi, Minister of Health Mutahi Kagwe said high-risk clusters would be given priority, including slum areas, hotels, hospitals, quarantine centers, and isolation facilities.
"But who to test? You have got to move in a very targeted manner in order for that testing to be effective. For example, if you know that an institution has had one or two individuals who have tested positive, it makes sense to say, let's first of all round up this institution and test all those workers who have been working with that person."
The government said it had deployed 12,000 testing kits to areas that it had identified as high risk. Kenya's number of coronavirus cases has steadily risen over the past month. The virus has been found in at least 21 of 47 counties since the first case was reported on March 13th. In previous weeks, the World Health Organization warned that African countries were not getting accurate figures on the extent of coronavirus cases due to a lack of robust testing. Kenya's Ministry of Health has been testing an average of 400 samples per day, but on Tuesday, the country tested more than 800 samples in 24 hours, the highest figure so far. Kenya has confirmed 225 cases of the virus and recorded 10 deaths. Rael Umbur for VOA News, Nairobi.
Malawi's government has put the nation on lockdown to stop the spread of the coronavirus. The virus has so far infected 16 people in Malawi and killed two. People providing essential services will be exempt from the lockdown, but many worry the restrictions on movement and work will put many at risk for food shortages. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Endless Muheziwa has been surviving on income she gets from selling dry wood after she exhausted the two bags of maize she harvested this year from her garden. A single mother of three children is among thousands of farmers affected by armyworms this year in Mulanje district in southern Malawi. She told VOA via telephone interview that although she appreciates the need to curtail the spread of the coronavirus, the lockdown seems too severe. She says it will be too difficult for us people in the villages to have money at once that can sustain us for 3 weeks. I survive on selling dry wood, so now, instead of dying of the disease, we would die of hunger. Muheziwa suggested it would be better if government delivers food items to families in need, like hers. Announcing the nationwide lockdown Tuesday night, Health Minister Japi Muhango said the measure is aimed to curtail the spread of COVID-19, which he said would kill about 50,000 people in the country if left uncontrolled.
"Except for the enforcement officers, no person shall be allowed to leave their homes unless they are listed under Rule 11, Subrule 3A, Roman Numeral 1 of the Public Health Rules 2020.
Others exempted include persons delivering essential services like food, drugs, and utilities. The lockdown also calls for the closure of all main markets across the country. However, Muhango said communities will be allowed to sell and buy commodities at local markets and shops that will be allowed to open between 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. Bichani Cheleni, an economist lecturer at the University of Malawi, views the move as a recipe for trouble. He spoke to VOA via telephone interview.
What we are going to see is going to be a proliferation of many of the people who ply their trades in the main markets and begin to sell them in the localities. And again, there's going to be some challenges to Hefe workers and officials, because now they have to think about how are we going to decongest even those places which we thought are not congested as much.
As others worry about the lockdown, Rose Chisowa, an agro-based trader in Lilongwe, sees an opportunity. Chisowa, a supplier of agricultural products across Lilongwe City, believes she will exempt from the lockdown.
Of course, depending on drama, it's to our own advantage.
She says, of course, we'll make a lot of money because many people will stop going to markets and rely on us to deliver the food items right in their homes, and we'll take up the risks. So it is good for us farmers. Health Minister Muhango said the measures will be reviewed as the need arises. President Peter Mutharika said the lockdown, expected to end May 9th, may be extended as circumstances warrant. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
As South Africans start looking for new ways to get by under the just extended COVID-19 lockdown, the fight to lift the ban on alcohol is taking center stage. Break-ins at alcohol selling facilities have doubled, and those caught in the act include police officers. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The ban on alcohol during South Africa's lockdown has divided the nation. Alcohol users accuse the government of being unfair and want the ban lifted. Sean Shelley is with the South African network of people who use the drugs and supports the call.
If you stop using alcohol rapidly, you get withdrawal symptoms where you lose touch with the world and you develop a thing called delirium tremens, and it can be life-threatening, and in about up to 4% of people, they can die. So that's quite a lot of people.
But one South African who preferred to remain anonymous disagrees.
Don't open up alcohol stores, because then what's the point of the lockdown? Because then people use that as an excuse to go out.
Seven police officers are among those nabbed trying to break into bottle stores. Mark Lockwood, an addiction psychologist, says this reveals a deep addiction problem.
On a chronic level, so that would be physical withdrawals, where your body can actually go into a kind of a shock. But for most people, it will just be uncomfortable. But the 1% where it hits the body, that's where it can be dangerous.
Kurt Moore, CEO of the Liquor Brands Owners Association, does not support lifting the ban, but says illegal alcohol manufacturers have taken advantage of the situation.
They are usually much cheaper than the legal product because they don't pay the excise tax on those products. With constricted supply, we anticipate the demand will increase, and ultimately they'll be asking or demanding higher prices. So then it becomes very difficult to tell illicit from the real product.
Political economy expert Sia Biniza says the decision to lift the ban during this difficult coronavirus time should not be taken lightly.
I think it needs to be strategic in terms of what sectors or areas of the economy we open up without jeopardizing in terms of human lives and the impact of the pandemic.
Police Minister Pekicele is urging alcohol users to wait, but that can be difficult. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's it for this Thursday, April 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of the VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz. 19.2 meter band.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndumbulu and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.